It should be. It should be. Okay, everybody, we are live. We are live, folks, and welcome to the inaugural new show, Founders Focus. This is where we get up close and personal with the leaders of the technology businesses that are changing the way in which we work and hire. And I'm delighted to welcome you all to this show. We came up with this idea basically because, you know, we all have to use technology in order to become more efficient with the work that we do. But it's a rare opportunity for us to actually speak to the people who are driving the businesses of the software that we're buying. So the idea behind this series is, can we get to know the people, the leadership group, who are behind these amazing technology companies. So to kick off episode one, I'm delighted to welcome our first guest, our first guinea pig even, Steve Lucas, CEO of iSIMS. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you. This is great. Oh, hey, we've got a little bit of an echo.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, you know what? I think I know. I totally got this figured out. It wouldn't be an inaugural anything without a little echo.
No, and I think what that is, it's a wired, a sort of a situation where if you've got wired headphones, that might sort that out because it's probably picking up the audio from both sides, from my side and your side.
Yep. Can you hear me?
We do, but we still have that echo.
I got it.
Oh, by the way, folks, you might have noticed this is a live show. And part of the attraction of doing everything live is that you get to see kind of stuff like this, where we have to kind of rig things around.
But Steve, all right.
Are we good?
Got it.
We're perfect. Amazing. That's kind of like a DJ level sort of manipulation, sound engineering there, Steve. I love it.
You want to know what it was? I'm going to tell you anyway. So it was, I had multiple browser windows open and I was broadcasting from both windows.
Yeah, I totally get it. This is why sometimes I have like some people have multiple screens and it can be an even worse effect. It's like one of these things that we haven't quite figured out in terms of how to automatically get it done. But great that we're having this conversation in any case. I'm delighted to have a chat with you. So let's just jump right in, Steve. First things first, man. I mean, you're a busy CEO of a $1 billion turnover business. So why on earth, sort of, what have you cancelled to get onto the show, man? What critical meeting is not being made in order for you to feature on Founders Focus?
Well, you know, okay. So, like everybody else, though, my social life is pretty much zero right now. I've gone. You're looking at the chair that I've sat in for the past year, especially during COVID. So. This was a priority, man. I was looking forward to coming on the show, and I think for all of us, it's been an amazing, crazy last year, and really looking forward to decoupling from the 2020 mindset and just kind of starting to see friends and family get vaccinated, and you know, a lot of encouraging things. So on a serious note, like, I am thrilled to be here, and really looking forward to talking about, you know, the future, because I think we've all had enough of 2020.
Quite right. And you know what? One of the best things to do before we look into the future is always to have a solid grounding of the past, Steve. So I want us to jump into a time machine and rewind back several decades here. Not even several decades, because you're actually quite a young man. Let's say two decades, and get you to the beginning of this journey. Because, you know, you're at the situation, Steve, you're CEO of one of the leading ATS providers in our space. That's not many people are in that seat. So I wondered, sort of, when you started your own professional journey, when you started off doing your work, what did you imagine yourself doing? I mean, was there any kind of, did you imagine being in this seat at some point, or was it just the case where, you know, I wanted to do this and you ended up in this situation at some at a later stage?
That's a great question. You know, I think it's probably a couple things. I think everybody has this you know, kind of vision or internal fantasy about like, what do you want to be, right? We all have that thing, right, where we kind of kick back our feet and just imagine. I was no different. You know, I think I imagined, you know, at earlier parts in my career being a CEO. And I will say for the entirety of my career, I've always wanted to lead. So I don't know if I could say that exactly unequivocally I wanted to be a CEO, but I knew I wanted to lead. Now, I will say throughout my career, maybe it's just that I found out I wasn't any really good at any one particular thing. I'm just pretty good at a lot of things. So I don't know if that's what led me to be CEO, but I think it was a passion for leading. And I will tell you this, I freaking love technology. I love everything about it. I love what it does for us. Like right now, I mean, if you think about what we're doing right this second, you know, 10 years ago, this is like this whole, everything we're doing today, the world we're in, this is like someone, I mean, forget 10 years ago. If you went back a year ago and tried to talk to yourself, you know, a year ago and said, oh, here's what life's going to be like, you'd say, are you crazy? But if you think about it, you know, technology has really enabled us to plow through the pandemic, to transform how we work. And I love that. I love the transformative power of technology. I just love it.
Do you know what, Steve? I love that you said that because nothing makes that more clear to me other than when you're speaking to, when I speak to my grandma, for instance, and I see her across this distance and she sees me and I can see that her face completely lights up because this is a miracle. You know, suddenly I'm like beamed into her room in a village in Hong Kong somewhere, whereas previously I might go years without seeing her. Because we're back on the old analog, you know, telephone stuff, and you know, you can't really exchange that much info. But here, you just beamed in, and it's as if you're really there. So, absolutely, I think we underestimate, don't we, how significant an impact this has been for us, telecommunications, social networking, and by and large, it's at a very low cost. I mean, again, you rewind back 20 years, do a video call like this. I mean, how much would you be thinking of paying to do it? But it's generally at really disposable cost, even free in many cases. So it is something definitely to be thankful for. Interesting, though, Steve, that you mentioned that leadership was always on the agenda for Steve Lucas. Do you think that being a CEO requires that mindset? I mean, do you think people might accidentally stumble on it? Or is it a case that, yeah, okay, in order to actually achieve that position, you probably have needed to have that ambition in order to get there? Like having the vision is part of what a CEO is and being able to execute on that is part of it. So it has to be strategic. It can't be emergent.
You know, there are all different flavors and kinds of CEOs. I mean, my personal opinion, though, is if you don't have a passion for leadership at some level, it's going to be really hard to be a good CEO. And, you know, not a day goes by that I don't learn a new lesson, even 25 years into this. It's one of those things as CEO where you learn that. I'll give you a great case in point. I had a call the other day with one of our large organizations, and I started off the call really great. You know, here's why we're here. This is our mission and vision. Let's go get it. And then, you know, a lot of dialogue through the call, and then I got to the end, and I was pissed at myself because I wrapped up the call. I said, okay, thanks everybody for joining. Have a great week. And, you know, they hung up, and I realized, I just paused and I thought, I missed an opportunity for a leadership moment again, you know, and that was to pause and say, hey, we've had a great dialogue today. Let me bring all of you back to why we're here. And in the case of iSIMS, not that this is part of it, but just, you know, I like to remind people that we're here because we help people find jobs. That's what our technology does. And I love that about who we are. And that moment, like how we all feel right now when we tether to that. We help people find jobs. I love that mission and vision. But you catch yourself missing those leadership moments. And it's just a reminder that, you know, being a great leader, it's about the in the moment, right? It's can you consistently rise to the occasion, bring people back to center and help them understand, well, why are we here? It's easy to forget in the world that we're in, you know, because we'll finish this great dialogue that we're having today, and we'll go back to, you know, 24 Zoom calls or whatever we've got today, right? The world's evolved from working from home to living at work, and it's a grind. And it's just so important to remind yourself, remind your team, remind your peers, remind whoever it is, why you're here, why we're doing what we're doing. And it's just one of those things that never ceases to amaze me how I'm constantly learning, you know, how to be a better leader. But if you don't have that passion for leadership and you're not constantly getting better at it, I think it's going to be pretty hard to be a good CEO.
You're giving us a lot of really interesting insights into the mindset of being a CEO, actually, Steve. And I want to sit a little bit longer on this idea of a leadership moment. So what you're saying is, like, one of the roles of being a CEO, being any kind of leader at any level, is to be able to reconnect the group to the purpose, even after you're dealing with a bunch of operational stuff that is, you know, hey, we've got to just bash it through boxes here. We've got to do this, this, and this. But you've got to reconnect them to the wider vision, because your job is to look at that vision more so than others and then to look back down again on how you need to get there.
Yeah, your job is why, right? That's it.
That's really interesting. How did you learn this, Steve? I mean, were you born, it was out of the crib, you bounced out and you were like, yep, no. I knew how to do this. No, do you go to leadership school? Like, how do you develop the know-how to do this?
Well, there's always, you know, I think it's a combination learning. And first of all, I think I really bristle at the phrase a born leader. I really do. Because I think that leadership skills are learned and acquired and certainly can be. Part of it is you have to overcome your own, you know, kind of your natural disposition. When I was younger, I was, you know, fairly shy when I was a kid. And, you know, you have to overcome that, a little bit of that. It's difficult to be shy and, you know, kind of be a strong leader at the same point in time. Part of it is, but I will say, so it's overcoming a natural disposition that maybe you have, one. Two is you got to have some heroes in this world. And those heroes cannot sound and look like the person that you are. They got to look different. They got to be people that push you outside of your comfort zone, that, you know, aren't the same look as, like, you know, as me. Because the reality is, when you're developing perspective, if the only people I'm going to go listen to are, you know, men that look like me, I'm not going to develop a robust point of view. I'm just not. And so you got to have heroes, but those heroes have to be diverse. They have to have a point of view that's fundamentally different than your own. Because, and you know this, right? We live in this echo chamber of a world right now where it's like, you know what? The only news I want to listen to is stuff that I agree with. And that's the problem with the world we live in today, is it's just this big giant echo chamber. We need to get out and listen to things that don't agree with our point of view all the time.
You know what? That is, you're throwing so many great points here. I hope people are making notes, because this would be a very good bullet point blog post at some point to say, hey, here's some leadership tips. Two things you mentioned here, which I want to explore a little bit. The perspective concept, I think, is really important, because as a CEO of certainly a large business, you can't afford to not have a diverse perspective. I mean, possibly if you're like running a small business, you know, family store or something, maybe you can get away with being a little bit narrow focus. But if you have any kind of national or international ambition, then surely you need to have this wide perspective and have it all feed into you. But you said something before, which I thought was really interesting, which was the idea that, you know what, there's going to be some natural dispositions which don't necessarily lean towards leadership. And you may need to have to work on those, maybe even overcome them, in order to be more effective as a leader. And this is interesting for a couple of reasons, one of which is, firstly, we hear a lot of talk in the recruiting space or HR space to say, hey, you should really, you know, be who you are. You should always, you know, don't feel like you need to be anybody different, etc. All of this sounds perfectly great. You know, if you're looking after people, why would you want this person to be anything other than what they are? However, that is a slightly different, a point in the spectrum to, hey, you need to possibly self-develop here, and here's an opportunity for you to grow. And there's certain things that inhibit your ability to be a CEO or a leader of some type. So you were a shy kid. in your own estimation, at what point did you feel that, okay, I needed to break through this or get used to this sensation that I'm not happy with in order for me to be a leader at whatever level that was? Do you remember any of those moments when you were younger?
Oh, yeah. I think we all develop comfort in our own skin, who we are. And, you know, what I would say, you know, there are moments where some of which, you know, like when you don't make the high school basketball team that you tried so hard to make, it's, you know, you might interpret that as, you know, people would say, you know, it's failure. I don't think it's failure. I think it's just a, you know, it's a growth and development opportunity where you have to, you know, realize that, you know, I wasn't comfortable putting myself out there and yet I did, and I still didn't get what I wanted. But at the end of the day, I got to be comfortable with who I am, which is, okay, I'm not going to be in the NBA. I'll just have to struggle through that. But, you know, one moment in my early 20s that sticks out. So it was, you know, I'm 48 today, but when I was younger, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And that was a really tough thing for me. Really hard. Because, you know, I like, you know, working out, being fit and shape, all those good things. And then you get this kind of chronic disease or illness, whatever you want to call it. And you kind of realize a couple of things. You go, wow, one, I'm not mortal or immortal. I'm mortal. That's bad. So there's that. And then two is, you know, why me? You go through this why me phase. Like, why am I the one that should be afflicted with this? And I learned very quickly that if you aren't willing to overcome the obstacles that are in front of you, right, then life will just put you in a corner and box you in and you'll go nowhere. You'll be nothing. And that's, and all of us have those challenges. So throughout life, I'd say, look, I've had, you know, my share of challenges to overcome, but you know, the one immutable thing that I have learned, even with my own challenges, is the simple phrase, you know, never judge a book by its cover, is you don't know the journey that someone has been on or is going through based on how they look. You don't know. You don't know what struggles they have. You don't know what challenges they've overcome. So what I have found is a real passion, and this is part of what helped me overcome some of that shyness, is just digging in with people. It's like, I want to find out about you. I want to know your story. I want to know what makes you tick and unpack you. And in doing that, I think you really learn how to motivate people. You learn what, you know, what makes them tick. And so I don't know if there was any one trigger point, but certainly a lot of experiences have led me here.
Yeah. I mean, I love that, Steve. There is this, firstly, this idea of comfort zone, you know, everyone can, and the problem with comfort zone is that it shrinks, right? It doesn't expand. So in other words, you get comfortable in some place, that's amazing, but then you end up doing less stuff or you're taking less risks, and actually your comfort level just shrinks and shrinks and shrinks until before you know it, you're not doing anything or taking any risks. And actually, I think this is currently a major problem for us. It's a risk at a macro level because of the COVID-19 scenario. We're all locked in at home and we're getting very, very comfortable with, you know, being in pajamas and stuff. I'm actually impressed that you're wearing a collar today, Steve. I anticipated you were doing that, hence I wore this. But hey, you know, we're very used to being comfortable as the ones that, you know, do have the privileged situation and get away with that. But it's one of those where we have to keep pushing at those edges and making sure we expand it. I don't know whether you ever read any sports psychology, Steve, but I picked up this book a long time ago by a Swedish psychologist who was coach, who was like a fellow who was supporting the England international football team at the time. And he was talking about this concept of a performance cage, whereby elite athletes are the ones that have the widest performance cage. So in other words, they have the ability to swing in terms of performance level, but they don't have a mental crisis if they happen to have a bad performance. They are able to bounce back quick. So in other words, they have a short memory on court, for instance. They miss a three throw, they're back on playing. They don't have like 10 minutes where they're completely freaking out about it. So they've got a very wide performance cage before they suffer anxiety. Whereas the ones that may have the equal equally competent athletes that don't hit the elite level, the ones with smaller performance cages, whereby if they have a problem or they make a mistake, they sit in that area of mistake for a little bit longer than the elite guys, mm-hmm. and they spend a little bit longer not performing. And then they make another mistake and they keep doing that. And then to the point where suddenly you wonder why they're any good. So anyway, I don't know why I segued into that, but I just thought, you know what, comfort level, performance cages, similar kind of concepts. We kind of got to push up those edges all the time and challenge ourselves whenever we're feeling too comfortable. That's the moment to push forward. So fascinating stuff. Interesting you mentioned about sports, because I think you can learn a lot about leadership from sports. What did you learn about leadership from being a sports person, whatever kind of interest you had at the time, Steve?
Yeah, well, I think one is you called it out, is that you know, in anything, but certainly in sports, is that it's not filled with victory. That's what you read about all the time, right? Is it's but the reality is that suffering loss can be a stronger lesson than winning. And I think, you know, in fact, when I look back, whether it's sport or even in business, I've learned more from when I've lost. And, you know, I've been, you know, a number of times I've been quoted saying that a great leader is, you know, someone that has made 10,000 mistakes you'll never make again. You know, so part of it, I mean, that's just life, is, you know, making mistakes. But certainly sports, from my perspective, I mean, it is about, you know, the cliche notions, right? It is teamwork. But here's the thing, and maybe this is what led me to the business that I'm in today, is winning teams are built with great athletes that you put on the field consistently. That's a winning team. And for me, if I look at any business I've run, you know, running iSims or when I was CEO of Marketo, the reality is, you know, winning in any business, it's, can I recruit the best athletes and then let them play? Now, I will say I had to learn that lesson the hard way, because, you know, I used to recruit great athletes and I'd still tell them what to do. But the worst thing you can do is hire brilliant people and tell them what to do. They need to tell you what to do. And, you know, I found through, you know, this kind of personal development process as well, is it really is about getting the best athletes, those brilliant people, letting them play, letting them go. But you've got to, that's a trust thing, right? You've got to develop that. It's all the harder to do. By the way, I've been CEO of iSims. I have met, like, you know, half of my leadership team. The other half, like, I've never met them in person. I've had to hire through, you know, COVID and the whole nine yards. So it's certainly been a different playbook in terms of developing how you build a great team, leveraging or building on the sports metaphor as well. But it has been an interesting run.
You know, that's really interesting for a relationship from a, let's say, a coach's point of view to that elite squad, and also the relationship those teammates have with each other. Because one of the things that is definitely true is, you know, you got to give them space to play. The other thing which made where the analogy kind of gets stretched just a little bit is the proximity of different parts of the leadership team might have to each other. So, for instance, on a sports club, presumably every single player is going to be will have an impact directly on everyone else, right? You got like five players on the court at any one time. That fourth player is going to impact the third player, et cetera, et cetera. In the leadership team, it may not work exactly the same way, or does it? I'm speculating, but if you've got like a big squad of managers, you've got 20 people, let's say, at the top level, I mean, do they all have the same degree of influence on the other? Or have you got, let's say, an R&D guy over there that, you know, maybe just he gets on with his stuff and, you know, pumps out the product or whatnot, and doesn't actually have that operational day-to-day influence all the time, simply because of the job function that they're in? Yeah. How do you think about that, Steve?
Well, I think that, you know, leaders, you know, there's different kinds of leadership teams, right? You can have teams where it's, you know, very, you know, kind of swim lane focused. Hey, you're in engineering, you're in finance, you're in HR, you're in marketing, you're in sales, and none of the twain or however many that was shall meet. I just don't believe that. I don't believe that's the right path. I think as leaders, and this is certainly something I do with my leadership team, you need to be naturally curious about a lot of stuff. I remember when I was a kid getting in a significant amount of trouble. My mom left me at home to go do something. I think it was like 9 or 10. And I disassembled the dryer, like the washer and dryer, because I wanted to know how it worked. Of course, the problem with that is when I tried to put it back together, I had lots of extra parts. But I learned a lot, you know, in that. But the reality is that if you're not naturally curious, I don't know if I'd say, hey, you can't be a great leader, but certainly not on my team. The reality is that being curious about other people, number one, number two, their businesses and just how things work, it's one of the more powerful things that you can do as a leader. And guess what? Everybody that works with you or for you, they know if you're not interested, right? They know if you're not curious. And I find that whether something is your subject matter area of expertise or not, is just be curious. And it's that little mantra, be curious, it has served me very, very well.
How do you assess for that, Steve? I think that as we keep talking, I think that aspect is a very important part of your philosophy generally in life and also how you operate as business. But how do you assess for curiosity when you're like hiring for a leader for department A, B, or C? It seems like a very intangible thing to try and tease out.
It can be, but you know, maybe I'm a little bit of a student. Not that I'm the world's biggest fan of Elon Musk, so don't, you know, this is definitely not worth rotating too much into. But you know, he asks one question in his interview process that I think is really good. The question he always asks is, tell me about the toughest challenge you've ever faced in your career, the toughest problem, and how did you fix it? That's it. That's his one question. And I think it's very powerful, right? Because on the left hand, if the problem's not big enough or complicated enough, you know that the person really hasn't tackled anything too tough. And then that's not affected by job, right? It just depends on, I mean, you could face tough challenges in any role. And then the other part of it, the other right-hand side of that is, well, if you don't have a detailed enough response where you can articulate, how did I deconstruct the problem? How did I ultimately address it with what tools? Then they probably weren't the person that fixed it, or they weren't the person that owned the problem, right? And I find that that question is powerful because you want people that own problems. You want people that are going to just deconstruct and take apart something complicated and then find a way to put it back together. And even if, by the way, there are extra parts lying around, you know, at the end, the reality is that doing that question can unpack a lot of it. But that's one thing. And then the second thing is, I think you can, you know, there are ways to get at people's level of curiosity, right? Is I tend to, in any interview that I'm doing with a candidate, I will generally put out there one or two provocative statements to see if someone bites. If someone bites and they go after unpacking that, well, how did you do that? Why? Where, you know, what I find is the death knell for anyone in an interview is when someone says, well, do you have any questions for me? And then the answer is, no, I think you've covered most of it. It's the worst response I've ever heard.
Yep. Yeah, I get it. You know what? I now want to be interviewed by you, Steve. It's like, I want to apply for a job and like go through this process.
You should feel free.
No, I think it's actually really interesting. CEOs, again, at the end of the day, making a call on the leaders is, as you say, critically important to the future of the business. I'm sure every CEO has a different take, a different approach. But presumably, if you've been successful as a CEO over a period of time, maybe there's a formula there that has some value, and it's a pattern that could be useful for us. Let's not forget, people paying attention to this show are recruiters. They are involved in this process. So I just wonder whether it might be possible for us to ultimately pick up some patterns there from the CEOs that could be interesting to explore.
Well, there's definitely pattern recognition. And I'd say for the audience here today, I mean, the big thing for me, you know, is I think the world that we're in today, when it comes to finding great talent, this, I think we reached a tipping point with COVID and the whole pandemic relative to how we find, engage, and then hire great talent. I think the world is so radically different today, and post-COVID, whenever we get to that point, is going to be all the more so because of this video, or what we're doing right now, right? Engaging and connecting. There is so much that has changed and so much that is yet to change. We're never going back. And I think the days of things like hey, I got a job description that was largely written by legal that I'm just going to post on my career site. And then, hey, someone's going to reply to that job description with a resume that was probably written by someone they paid to write it. Those days are gone. They are dead. And what we're doing right now, this video engagement, this authenticity, this is what's here to stay.
Yep. You know, some of those stuff as well needed to go. They were hanging on and COVID came in as an asteroid and blew it out. And it was not long before time. So we're not going to be sorry to see some of those things disappear. But you did bring into us to the modern day really, really well, Steve. How has leadership changed with COVID-19? You talked about, okay, I need to assemble this leadership team. It does this, and this. Has that changed in any way now that we are in this post-pandemic world, for instance? Does leadership feel different if we're all distributed? Are we now looking for different qualities of people based on the fact, you know, we're communicating in different ways? Things of this nature, Steve. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, depending on your point of view on human evolution, I'll just put this out there, right? Millions of years of human evolution, our greatest invention, it wasn't, or discovery, whichever way you want to look at it, wasn't fire or electricity or all these, it was culture. It's the greatest invention, the thing that we invented. And in culture, by the way, you know, from millions of years ago, sitting around a campfire telling stories about the buffalo or the woolly mammoth hunt or whatever it is that we did way back then to today. The reality is that we're at this point in time, this tiny dot on the human timeline or the human story, where we've said, oh, you know what? We're actually going to do all this virtually, right? Part of that is health driven, and that's an important thing. But culture it's part of who we are. It is genetic. It is a DNA, culture and community. And what I think is the big question mark is how will we deal with our deep-rooted need for culture when we're not physically coming in contact with one another? How will we do that, right? And all companies are dealing with it somewhat differently right now. Everybody's got their own idea on what that is. You know, for me, even just with my own leadership team, I mean, we're doing things like, you know, we'll pause and go have a Zoom call that has literally nothing to do with work. And, you know, like a chocolate tasting, for example. And the reason you'd want to do that is because, I mean, think about the dynamic of what we all do right now. We have our problem list of stuff we got to do at work, right? And then we say, okay, so what we're going to do is from 6 in the morning until 6 at night, we're going to come and have like 42 Zoom calls and just talk about stuff that's wrong. When do we talk about what's right? When do we focus on just developing interpersonal relationships? At what point we'd be able to go to lunch together or go have a team dinner? And we're not doing those things right now. So when you kind of gut that from the equation, then you really realize, like, holy cow, all we're doing is talking about stuff that's broken all the time. And that is so freaking depressing, right? It just is. And so I think what we have to focus on is how do we unpack and come back to that, the culture aspect of our business? How do we tether to that? And no matter what we do, whether you got to play, you know, a game online or whatever it is, just to, you know, because you fundamentally miss those things. And I think genetically we're programmed for culture. We just are, but we're not investing in it enough. So you've got that challenge, right? And then on top of that, I'm just looking at some of the great questions and comments coming in here. But I think the reality is that technology today, especially in this world of recruiting and hiring, it can be used for immense good. It's kind of like social media, but it can also be used for nefarious purposes. And we have to be very careful right now. We're at an inflection point where if all we rely on to get a sense for who you are or who I am is a resume, a piece of paper. And then I'll let some algorithm that's going to be biased inherently sort all that out. We've already failed. We failed ourselves and we failed our company. Frankly, we failed the community. What we need to be focused on is how do we focus? How do we go after not just the ponds that we fish in today, but new ponds with new and diverse talent, number one. And then number two, how do we engage like what we're doing right now, right? But at scale. If you're hiring thousands of employees, sorting through resumes is expired. You want to be, you know, through video applications and video interviews that are transcribed and analyzed for different levels of sentiment. Are you leaning in? How's your verbal dexterity? Are you passionate? We can score all those things through video. We could actually do that on this this podcast if we wanted to record it and analyze it. Our machine learning engine does that. And the point is not to say, well, that's the only way. It's another way where you start to look at the resume plus, you know, video application plus video interview, and then maybe an in-person interview. But you want to start to add all that scoring up to get that right with the candidate. That's the new way. And I think it's the way, you know, to do this at scale. So I know I kind of, you know, took a little right turn there, but
don't worry. I want to keep you back on track, Steve, because that right turn we're definitely going to go down, because we want to be talking about product direction for iSIMS in a moment. But I think you mentioned something that I was really, really important. I just want to, again, to sit on it a little bit. And this issue of leadership in large part, or management in large part, is the management of issues. You know, it's problem management, and how that can be a potentially demoralizing thing if you don't spend time to recognize that this is what you're doing, and then make sure that there's other things happening that are forward-looking and positive. Have a think about that, folks. If you're leading a team of people, if you're managing managers, are all of your managers doing stuff that is fixing problems? Because if that's all you've got them doing, that may be an issue. You need to give them something that's progressive. Yep. Cool. Team building. I totally agree with you, by the way. You know, human beings, nature, nurture, debate, it's completely intertwined. You can't have one without the other. There's never been a human being raised to adulthood that hasn't been enculturated. It's impossible. That child is not going to make it. So it's a false argument in my view. So we absolutely need to cultivate this. The question is, how do we do it without forcing it? Because one thing that terrifies me, Steve, is the enforced happy hours and the, you know, oh, let's have fun type of thing. I remember back in the day, maybe this is a figment of my imagination, but I remember back when going into the office, there was always like an attempt to be happy day, as if you can't be happy during the rest of you're grinding for the rest of the week. But hey, Friday afternoon, let's all forget all that and have jokes. And it didn't work because it just felt so false. How do we make sure it's an organic and authentic way to actually bond without it feeling like, you know, oh, the boss is telling me I need to, you know, put on a costume or something and be happy?
That's a great question. And I think we're still figuring that out, right? This is, even though, you know, COVID is kind of almost a year now into our consciousness, I think that it's going to be years before we fully figure this out. Here's what I will say. There's, you know, we do a couple things. I think one is we have, at the end of every meeting, not at the beginning, at the end, after we've kind of warmed up, we make sure that we don't close the meeting here at iSIMS without talking about an amazing employee, talent at our company, and what they're doing for our business. Because after, you know, several hours worth of, you know, stuff that you got to plow through, you got to bring it back, as I said at the beginning, to the why. Why are we here? And one of those, really strong reasons is you're great people. Your talent. That's one thing that we do. The second thing, and I would suggest this for anybody, is when was the last time? And I think maybe it's just because we've fallen into this, like, you know, Zoom groove. We're like, yeah, let's get to the problem, right? But when was the last time in a meeting you just paused and asked someone, like, what's your favorite movie? What is it? You know, like, we play this game. It's called Playlist. And I do it here with my family. I'm about to bring it here to iSIMS, where I read a statement and then everybody has to bring up their Spotify playlist, and you play a song that most reflects the, you know, like, what was the song that goes with your first kiss kind of thing. And then what's that song that pops in your mind? But you got to do stuff like that. You just got to pause. Remember that each, you know, person you're working with is a human being with hopes and wants and dreams. And it's good to remember that versus just you're talking to the television. And I have found that it's really easy to confuse reality and fiction, right? As we watch TV, and I'm a big television talker. Like if I disagree with something, from time to time, my daughter will con me into watching The Bachelor with her on television. I think it's a guilty pleasure type thing. Believe me, I don't tune into this regularly, but.
Don't be shy, Steve.
Come on, what are you doing? You know, so hey, I'm there to support my daughter, right? So, I am a TV talker, and you can confuse the reality of what we're doing here with talking to the television. You have to be very careful with that.
You know what? You've just mentioned something that's a really interesting phenomenon that I've been studying, which is the shared consumption of media may be a way to build teams. Yeah. So if you notice things that are really like massive on YouTube, for instance, they tend to be like reaction videos. So in other words, it's somebody watching something and you're watching that person watching the something, but you're watching them react to this thing. And that in itself is the entertainment. Mm-hmm. And of course, you can come into the chat, you can get involved in different ways and all that type of stuff. And I'm thinking, you know what, maybe there's a team build opportunity there where you can jointly share a moment. Here's the synchronicity with it, right? You can get everyone together and actually you're all watching it. So distribute it, that's fine, but everyone's focusing on the thing, but you're all watching it, reacting to it, and it's like part of the thing. So I think that could be a team building exercise. I'd be interested to see if anybody's got any examples of doing that, because as you say, we're all trying to wrestle with this together. Steve, moving on to how all of this applies to building technology. So, you're in charge of a business that is building technology that's helping companies recruit and manage, hire, build businesses. We know that the world of work is changing and company shape is going to change. How does that input? How do you kind of put that information into the product roadmap, let's say? What has kind of moved up or down in the roadmap in terms of priorities in the last 12 months or so, now that we know what this future is going to look like and what we know definitely the past is going to be staying in that past?
That's a great question too. Product roadmaps, especially in the world of recruiting, but they're always an amalgam of like, well, what do you want to build that you think is brilliant, wonderful, right? What do your customers want to build? And then even what's your competition doing, right? Because there's a lot of smart people out there. ISIN's not the only smart company, but we like to think that we're smart, but there's a lot of talent out there. And so, it always kind of ends up being an amalgam of those things. I think, it's probably cliche, but it is true, is like, listen to your customer, right? The reality is we serve in hiring really three key personas. There's the applicant / candidate, then there's the recruiter, and then there's the hiring manager and/or/ hiring team. All of those personas have different needs and wants, all of them. And if you ask the hiring manager, right, it's going to be totally different than the recruiter necessarily, than the candidate. But then the other thing is you got to look for red threads. Like, how do you drive things like collaboration amongst the candidate, the recruiter, the hiring manager, and hiring team? So there's kind of individual persona needs, and then there's universal persona needs. And we're always kind of teasing it out that way. For us, we have a simple vision. The vision is that we want to help companies build their best or winning workforce. That's what we want to do. And we argue or assert that the way that we do it is through what we call the talent cloud. And the talent cloud needs to or must have a couple key characteristics to it. It must be end to end. If we're building a point solution that won't be integrated across, the spectrum of recruiting activity, not a good idea. So the way we think about the talent cloud is we have these four pillars: attract, engage, hire, advance. And normally when I'm thinking about product, I think, okay, well, is it an attract tool like a career site or a job posting or an ad? Is it an engage tool like recruitment marketing for mobile or social or through email? Is it video application or video apply? Is it a video interview technology? And then, of course, things like, well, does that fit inside of, interview scheduling, offer management on board? And then ultimately in the advanced category, we're focused on, we know that, especially in today's world, like every employee is still a candidate. But I find it ironic that most of the time we spend all this time recruiting, right? And we build this great candidate profile. We know who you are, what your hopes and wants and dreams are. We even background checked that. And then the moment we hire you, you know, you delete it, right? You're like, oh, I don't need any more of your employees, so I'll just go put your birthday and your dependents and work day. We just lost everything that we know about you. Like, why would you do that? That's a terrible idea, right? So we've developed this continuum of attract, engage, hire, advance. And I'd say that what we do, those are the guardrails. It needs to fit in those things because, look, I just want this company, I've always wanted it to be the people pipeline or the talent funnel. I'm not knocking things like talent management or training. That's just not what I want iSIMS to be. I believe, just like sales has a pipeline management technology, it's called CRM. Marketing has a pipeline management technology, it's called marketing automation. Talent needs a pipeline management suite or platform, and we happen to call that the Talent Cloud.
Yep. And it's great that you have that focus on it, Steve. There is a temptation to try and, you know, swallow the entire ocean to say, of course, this was absolutely everything, and it'll end up doing, you know, pretty much none of it. So that focus on, you know, the journey a candidate goes through the business is super important. I wonder how much of that comes actually from your background, Steve, because you obviously worked with Marketo, you worked for businesses that were, you know, it was focused on that marketing side. Do you think you've brought that type of mindset into this industry?
That's a good question too, because it's like that what I saw happening in CRM way back in the day when I worked for Salesforce.com. So I ran AppExchange and Force.com for them, was I saw these big disruptor concepts, right? Automation, experience, engagement, the big stuff that drives disruption in, you know, at that point it was sales. And Salesforce.com, it's not like they invented Salesforce automation or customer relationship management, right? They didn't do that. You had Siebel and all these other companies that came before them. But they brought those disruptive things. They brought automation, engagement, experience, and the like. And, you know, it takes me a couple of times. I'm not the quickest read, but the pattern recognition kicked in when I was at Marketo and was like, okay, holy cow, automation, engagement, experience, all of those things for marketing. And then you look at what we do as recruiter or recruiting and talent executives. Well, how is it fundamentally different? Every company on the planet needs to be able to attract customers, engage them through your evaluation process, it's attract prospects, engage them through the evaluation, then convert them to customers, and then hang on to them. How is that any different than talent? You're attracting applicants and candidates, you know, then converting them to employees, and then hanging on to them. That's our job. But it needs that platform. So yes, I unequivocally feel like I'm bringing that, and heavily biased. But this is what it needs. Like, it just does. So I think it's kind of a left to right march through front office enterprise technology. This is inevitable.
It's a really interesting question asked by, so before we came on the show, Steve, I was saying to a bunch of people, say, hey, I'm going to speak to Steve. Anybody got any questions for Steve? A friend of mine called Bill Borman, I don't know whether you know him. He said, oh, ask Steve this. He's come from marketing tech background. He's come to the HR tech background. What, in his estimation, are the key differences between those two sectors when you sort of landed with the business, between marketing tech and HR tech, those two landscapes?
Great question. And, you know, obviously there are unique aspects of recruiting, but let's be clear. Like what I just said, discovering great talent, engaging them through their candidate journey, treating the candidate like a customer, and then converting that candidate to an employee through the interview, offer, and onboard process, and then holding on to the employee. How is it different? I don't think it is. I mean, the ridiculous amount of investment and innovation that's gone into marketing as a case in point, I mean, we need that in talent. We clearly do. Now, there are, you know, different aspects to it, but, you know, because at the end of the day, you're not buying a product, you're buying a company, a job, a way of life and living. And there are emotional depths to that go into the hiring process and the evaluation from a candidate standpoint. So humans, you know, very different than say evaluating a product. So you always have that people dynamic and aspect to this, and you never want to forget that. I think the biggest macro trend for me, the biggest differentiator going forward, is diversity, equity, and inclusion. That is the fundamental difference, you know, between say marketing, you know, here's a great product or car or whatever, and when you're talking about a company, is how do I unpack that I have a good company, I have a great culture, and we want you to bring your brilliance and your diverse point of view to our company. That's hard to do, right? If it was easy, then we wouldn't face, you know, DEI challenges that we do today across the, you know, all of the different industries that we work with. So it's hard to do.
I want to interrupt here because there's a really is a point I want to just explore a little bit further. There's two questions I want to ask you. What is the role that technology providers like iSIMS provide when it comes to supporting companies on the DE&I? Like, how does tooling support it, and what are you planning to do that's going to help companies diversify their workforce?
Well, so to be quick, because I just want to be respectful of time here too, number one is before you go out and change your workforce, you got to understand it. So the analytics that we're bringing to the table on who you're hiring, where you're sourcing from, you know, who ultimately stays and succeeds at your company, all of those rich analytics, you just got to have. Because it's difficult to change if you're not measuring who you are and where you hire. That's one. And then two, it's about discovering new and compelling places to go source from, right, when it comes to new candidates. And that's something that, again, from an analytics standpoint, we have. But then the process of identifying those candidates, getting them through, so attracting, engaging, hiring, and advancing, it has to be fundamentally different. If you're relying on job descriptions and resumes as your primary driver and then lots of complicated interviews, then that's just tired. The reality is it needs to be exactly what we are doing here. It needs to be, number one is, how do you engage candidates with video? We have a technology, we call it Video Studio. And what it does, you should go check this out. It's Target's website, Target's internship website, like the retailer Target. It's terrific. They actually get their employees using this Video Studio app from iSIMS. It's like TikTok. Mm-hmm. And I get pushed a question from the recruiting team as an employee, and it says, tell me what you love about your job. And then I answer it. And for the TikTok generation, it's perfect. I click submit, and then that goes into an iSIMS server where we transcribe the video. We analyze it for sentiment. Then the recruiters can put on job sites and career sites and all kinds of great stuff. Those videos that bring to life who your company is, what your culture is all about. And you can't do that with a couple paragraphs of why it's great to work at this company, right? It's your best brand advocates are your employees. Unleash them. So this Video Studio technology, that's about engaging candidates. Then getting candidates to apply through video, it's a no-brainer. It's not just about doing a video interview. It's, hey, you've got 5 questions, submitted video application. We can learn so many different things about you as a candidate through video, sentiment analysis, the whole 9 yards. So it's all of that coupled with a smarter AI platform, coupled with, yes, redacting resumes so you're avoiding bias and things like that. All of that comes into play, but it's not one thing. This is why we argue it's the end-to-end. It's having all of those capabilities in the talent cloud. There's just a lot of niche players out there that say, well, if you do this one thing, it'll fix everything. That's not right.
Yep. And by the way, folks, I start the campaign today to get Steve Lucas onto TikTok. I think that's what's missing on TikTok. I've been on it. I've been experimenting myself every day, 30 days, just to check out what's going on. I don't see any CEOs on there. I think it's about time you took the lead there, Steve. Yep. I think it will work out for you. Okay. I'm also conscious of time. So I want to end with a few questions that I think can help, let's say, the existing customer base of iSIMS have an idea as to what's happening down the road in 2021 with in terms of product and feature stuff and things like that. Obviously, anything under wraps, don't share. But is there anything that you can indicate to say, you know what, expect this, folks. This is going to be exciting.
Oh, yeah. I think, first of all, so our winter release is coming out right now. And so here in February, so that's super exciting. Again, I think that the questions to ask, you know, from an ISIM standpoint is, we won't cover this, we already did, but one is, okay, well, what's the talent cloud and how would it benefit my business? Two is, you know, when you think across that, you know, attract, engage, hire, advance, flow, or continuum, what parts of your company, what are they focused on, right? Generally, organizations go, hey, we're going to go get an applicant tracking system, so we'll focus on hire. But our career site looks like a giant hot mess. The reality is it's about end to end. So a lot of what we're delivering in the winter release timeframe is making sure that everything from the sourcing sites you're integrated with to your world-class career site that's interactive and, you know, video-centric to then your recruitment marketing capability through the engagement process with all of that capability from ISIM, so social, mobile, email, and the like. Then, of course, the video interviewing capability, all brand new in our winter release as well, to the machine learning capabilities that we have. We believe, given we have 360 million candidate profiles in our cloud platform, our ability to train our machine learning engine on the people that are applying to your company and then give you those five people that you should call in your starting lineup today. We think our machine learning engine is the best in the business. And then, of course, going through the offer management, onboarding, and then ultimately advancement process. It's about focusing on end-to-end, but I would tell you, in the winter release, look for AI and machine learning, big game changer for us. And then, obviously, video application, and then the video engagement.
There's a cornucopia of goodies coming for ISIM's customers, it seems. Okay, that's fantastic, Steve. I'm going to leave you with a final question because we are out of time. So thank you, everyone, for listening to this interview. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. It's been absolutely fascinating, actually, Steve. And I'd love to, this seems like it should be like a part 2, 3, 4, 5, like continue to have this conversation because we've learned so much from your philosophy on leadership and more. Let's leave it with the final question. We're going to close this call now. What does the rest of the day look like? What kind of things do you need to get done today, Steve Lucas?
I've got a bunch of analyst calls. I'm going to try and sneak in 30 minutes on the Peloton. I'm actually kind of excited because I'm getting ready to get vaccinated for COVID. So as I mentioned, I'm type 1 diabetic. It's the only time that being type 1 has benefited me mostly. So I'm looking forward to that. And then my wife promised me pizza later. And I got to tell you, I've been thinking about that all morning long.
That's the top priority, man. I get it. There's work, there's a vaccine, and there's your wife's pizza. The wife's pizza is right at the top. Okay, Steve Lucas, let me let you get on with your day. Thank you very much for joining us for Founders Focus. It's been an absolute pleasure. Hope you've enjoyed this show, everybody. Follow the channel if you want to watch more. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another Founders Focus.